IEDs, or improvised explosive devices, became a deadly hallmark of the Iraq War. They were hidden on roadsides and detonated as American convoys would pass over them. And as the war became one of occupation and counterinsurgency, these became the main weapons used by insurgents to attack U.S. troops.
Overall, more than 1,700 U.S. troops were killed by these devices, and many of them were from Arizona, according to freelance reporter Sean Holstage. His newest series on IEDs appears in the Phoenix New Times starting today.
In it, he uncovers the case of a 40-year-old Syrian man who was convicted on terrorism charges related to some of those IEDs here in an Arizona courtroom this year. The show's Lauren Gilger spoke with him more about that case and how it's only part of a broader effort in American courtrooms to hold someone accountable for all of those deaths.
So let's start with this man who was convicted on terrorism charges here in district court in Arizona. Who was he?
His name was Ahmed Al-Ahmed Abdulloka. He was known by the FBI as Ahmed Al-Ahmed. He was accused of and ultimately convicted of procuring electronic components from a company in Chandler. And those components were critical to the transmission of signals in the explosions of IEDs.
Tell us about this case and how the government went after this man.
So this all began in a routine sweep in August of 2006 in central Baghdad. And GIs kicked down a door, and they were in a mission to sort of go door by door throughout all of Baghdad, securing each building and making sure it was safe from threats. Mm-hmm. And as they were doing that, they tripped over this huge cache of electronic gear. And as they traced that gear, they traced it back to this company in Chandler, among other places. But they also started seeing some of those same components showing up in bomb sites. And as the war unfolded, the U.S. government created a number of special teams designed expressly to look at the forensic evidence in bombing sites and figure out, well, who's doing this? Mm-hmm. And what are these components? Can we take countermeasures? It turns out that these designs are like fingerprints. They're unique. And so the government began to put the pieces together and realize, okay, these bombs are coming from devices that look a lot like the ones we just found in Baghdad.
So how did U.S. government get this man here to Arizona in district court to charge him and convict him here?
So Al-Ahmed fled Iraq right around the time that they discovered his laboratory or his workshop, went to China and set up an export business selling electronic components all over the world, but particularly to counterinsurgents in Iraq, according to the federal government. Mm-hmm. They realized some of those components were coming from a company in Chandler. That gave them jurisdiction to then prosecute him in Arizona. And then it became a manhunt, and they tried to find him. They put out alerts to locate him. He steps off a plane in Istanbul and gets arrested, and that's when the court process began. 3 years of extradition, 3 more years of pretrial. It was quite a saga, and a lot of government agents were involved. I mean, it wasn't just the FBI. It wasn't just ATF. It was, you know, the Justice Department, the Commerce Department, the Diplomatic Corps. All kinds of people got involved in trying to bring him to justice.
Okay, so then I want to turn now to the second part of the story where you look at who paid for those bombs. So the U.S. government went after also prominent European banks that they say were linked to this. And there's also a class action lawsuit by some of the families whose children were killed as soldiers by these IEDs. So tell us a little bit about those efforts. What is it that they are accusing European banks of doing here?
So going back to the mid-90s, these European banks had relationships with Iranian banks and the Iranian government. And the Iranians wanted to get their money out of Iran and use it. They wanted specifically to convert it into dollars. So there was this complicated process by which they moved the money into Iranian bank subsidiaries in Western Europe. They then moved them into Western European banks in Western Europe. And then those banks would then move them into banks in the United States, all of which was legal at the time. Mm-hmm. The problem was they had to disclose all of that in order to get around trade sanctions and blacklists that the federal government and the Treasury Department set up. What the U.S. government accuses them of, these Western European banks, of doing is rewriting the bank transfer notes to disguise the origins of the money, which is in violation of a number of U.S. laws going back to World War I.
Right. So those banks sort of settled this case. What were the terms?
All different. Each bank admitted responsibility to different things at different times. But the upshot was, on aggregate, they paid more than $4 billion worth of fines.
Wow. As opposed to facing some sort of criminal charge?
In lieu of taking a prosecution. Yeah.
Okay. So there's also this class action suit by several of the families, some Arizona families as well. What are they arguing here?
So basically, they picked up that thread. And the argument is that because Western European banks were laundering Iranian money, mm-hmm. and because Iranian money ends up some of it in the hands of Hezbollah and some of the insurgent groups in Iraq, therefore that money paid to kill U.S. GIs. And there's throughout the war, and as the war unfolded, increasingly U.S. military officials would be saying, we're finding evidence that these types of bombs are coming from Iran, and Iranians are training the insurgents on how to use them and smuggle them. And so based on that evidence that has been put forward by the U.S. military, dozens and dozens of U.S. families, including four or five in Arizona, are taking that argument saying, well, therefore, you're materially supporting terrorists that killed our son.
Right. So you spoke with some of the families involved mm-hmm. in this. What do they say?
Different things. You know, one father basically thinks the entire war was a conspiracy by international banks. In the case of Robert Bartlett, who was very severely wounded, had half his face blown off, essentially, mm-hmm. in an IED attack, his family wants to use the money to make sure it doesn't happen again and to make sure that wounded veterans can get help and that basically the money pipeline is shut off. So each of them have a different goal. But I think essentially that's it. They want to hold somebody responsible and they want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. So that's interesting, right? Because isn't this sort of just the risk of going to war that you might be injured, you might die? I wonder if you think this says something about the way we fight wars today.
I think it says something about the sophistication with which we bring investigations in a battlefield.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the fascinating things about this is, you know, we think of wars as foreign, far away, bloody conflicts that start to fade in time. Even Iraq now is starting to fade in our memories a little bit. But it's a very real thing being played out in U.S. courts all over this country.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for that is because we had sophisticated teams on the ground gathering forensic evidence in a battlefield.
Yeah. So what's next for those families for this class action suit and for their kind of argument here?
They wait. I mean, this is a long, drawn-out court battle. It's already been in pretrial for a number of years. It's unclear how long it's going to stay in litigation. It's unclear if these banks are going to be willing to settle. I think for the point that you're just making, I mean— if banks now suddenly realize that they can be held culpable in a combat zone, they may be very reluctant to settle out with cases like this because it sets a precedent for future conflicts. And so it's unclear what's going to happen, but it's going to be a long, long, drawn out and probably an incomplete resolution for these people.
Yeah. All right. Sean Hostage, thank you so much for coming in.
Appreciate it. Thank you.